Good morning, everyone. I might declare the meeting open at 9:30, if I might. As always, I'd like to begin by acknowledging the Quandamooka people, who are the traditional custodians of the land in which we meet this morning, and also like to pay respect to their elders past and present, and extend that respect to other Indigenous Australians that may be present here this morning. Just a quick reminder for our members in the public gallery today, there is some standing orders that apply to your presence here and participation in this meeting, and I'll just run through those. Firstly, all members of the public present at this meeting must not, without the prior approval of the chairperson, make any audio or video recording or take any photographs, remain quiet and not disrupt the meeting in any way, not bring into the meeting any signs, placards or items that may cause a hazard or interfere with any person present, be suitably dressed, turn all mobile devices to silent mode and leave the meeting to take any phone calls. And just a reminder, as chairperson, it is my responsibility to warn a member of the public present at a meeting who is not complying with any of these requirements, and I may, without such warning, require the person to leave the meeting and not return for a period of time, such as the chairperson decides, and this may include future meetings. I haven't been advised of any leaves of absence this morning, so we'll go straight to our devotional segment. And it's my great pleasure this morning to ask a member of the Redlands Ministers Fellowship, Steve Kennedy from Champion Church, to lead counsel in a brief devotional segment. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. Maybe in a fishnet shinglet. I wouldn't be the dapperest person around, but often I'll get a call from my daughters, having seen me on Facebook, and said, "Dad, please, please." So my first daughter is 32. She's a nurse by training, and I just thought I'd just let you know one thing I've learned from each of them, and I've only got 26 kids, so it shouldn't be long. But this girl's 32, she's got two kids. I brought her home in a little white gown from hospital and took her out in a white gown 20 years later. And where the hell did that go? You know, and if I learned one thing from it, you've got to sort of get yourself a plan, you've got to get yourself some priorities, and then you've pretty well got to get into it and get on with it. My second daughter, if I can find her, is a high school teacher by training, majored in history and English, and married 8 years. And she taught me one thing. In fact, her teachers taught me this about her, and that is that one person with a learned conviction is never at the mercy of 100 people who are ignorant with an opinion. And her learning sort of tells us that. But the other thing she really teaches me is that spirit or heart does not have annual birthdays. I'm understanding that a crocodile does not grow to 4 metres because it's been alive a long time, but it grows to 4 metres by virtue of its environment. And I found so too the heart and spirit of a person. Mayor, I had a fellow visit my church one time that had a ministry, as he called it, to 25-year-old depressed single women. He even, not you, of course. But if you are in my position, that would put antennas up immediately. He drove an old ambulance, which was a convenient mode of transport for someone with his particular professionalism. I told him without any uncertainty he would never practice that ministry in this church. He agreed to that and asked me to pray for him, at which time he dropped to his knees in the car park with his arms held back. And my daughter, who was about 10 at the time, just went like this. She went... And I thought, wow, how could she know he's a Fruit Loop, being only 10? But because of, you know, I just have learned that, you know, your heart develops at the rate of your diligence. And my third daughter, well, excuse me, that's one of my sisters, always trying to, I have 7 of them, by the way. But that's my third daughter, she's 26 years of age, and if you can see the look on her face, that's exactly how she lives life. She wouldn't like me telling you this, but she's the daughter with the tattoos and the earrings, and loves her mum and dad, was over for dinner on Monday night. But she taught me that it's an age-old thing, that attitude trumps aptitude. She worked at a phone shop last year. She was serving somebody, and her colleague, at the end of the thing, was being abused by a customer. The person addressing her said, "I bet you're glad you've got us." And she simply said, "Well, we're just trying to treat everybody nicely. No matter how they treat us, we just try to meet their needs." The woman she was serving stepped back and went, "Wow. I would love you to work for me." She soon got an email from the lady, and an interview went from $35,000 to $55,000, which we thought is pretty good for a girl that totally failed school. And So she's taught me that. Just keep a good attitude. Yeah, sometimes there's argy-bargy. Obviously, in a meeting like this, there'll be differences of opinion. But if we try not to keep it, make it personal, and we try to stick with the issue, I think then we can all rise to a new level. Which leaves me with one more. This is my boy. He's 21 years of age. My wife and I now live on our own, by the way, which is just fantastic. It is just brilliant. They don't like me saying, but he's a carpenter. An electrician by training. But he taught me this. I was with him. We're on holidays, man. We went to church. The girls didn't want to go to church, but me and the boy went to church. And there was a Uniting Church around the corner. Not the church I would normally go to, but we went around the corner. They had a collection for a need, and I saw my boy pulling out his wallet. So I leaned back because I didn't want him to see me looking. But I wanted to see what he did. And he pulled out $5. Which for us isn't much, but for him, that's a day's pay. We gave them $5 a day when they're on holiday, so this is a whole day's wages for him. I saw him pull it out, and he put it in the bucket. I was so impressed that I went home, and I said to my wife, I said, before the end of the day, he'll have 10 back. And I put 10 under his pillow, and then, of course, played a dad game till he found it that evening. It taught me this, and this one's really about our Father God. In Matthew 7:11, it says this, you being sinful, know how to give good gifts to your children. How much more will I, your Heavenly Father, want to grace you if you ask? So my job today is to ask that God would grace us. And I think God's a little bit like our federal politicians and all of us. We serve the people who voted for us and the people who didn't. So I'm going to ask God's grace to be upon those that like him, those that are indifferent, and those that maybe have something they want to talk to him about. So let me pray for you. Heavenly Father, I thank you very much for the opportunity, Lord, of standing right here with the leaders of our city. And Lord, I pray that you would grace them. Lord, I pray, Lord God, as they, and I'm sure they do it, Lord, they come to a day like this with a degree of sobriety and humility. And I pray, Lord God, that you would now, we're asking that you would grace us with wisdom and courage, Lord, to take our city forward. Lord, to be good to those at the top of the social tree and those that are struggling at the bottom, that we might be cohesive in the things that we do. Particularly, I pray for our mayor, that you would grace her, bless her family, be good to her in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. Thank you very much. It's been wonderful to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you. So, councillors, the next item on the agenda is a recognition of achievements section, and I thought we might use this particular segment to present some well-needed funds to some community groups who have applied through our councillors' grants fund. So, if I may just quickly outline that, this financial year, Redland City Council will invest heavily, about $1.4 million in grants and sponsorship of community and sporting groups and local residents who have achieved in their particular field, and we know that we get back tenfold for that small investment. We offer even more in terms of our in-kind support and assistance to a broad range of groups that are vital links in our community chain. We all see this as an opportunity to strengthen our lifestyle and our wonderful, unique sense of community here in Redlands. So it gives me great pleasure today, on behalf of Council, to be able to hand over two cheques totalling around $10,000, one to the Donald Simpson Centre and also to the Special Olympics Redlands. I think for most of us, the Donald Simpson Centre doesn't need any introduction. It's been part of our community for many years and serves as a great community hub, particularly for those over 50. And I'm almost there. So listening to many of our older residents, they'll tell you they couldn't do without this centre. They say it's a vital part of their life, their social interactions, and some of them actually make a visit part of their daily routine, and that's significant. The centre has been developed and run for the benefit primarily but not exclusively of our elder residents and for members of the community looking towards retirement who may wish to join up and access activity and information programs to enable thoughtful preparation for and the experience of a healthy and enjoyable quality of life. Its aim is to help residents exercise their bodies as well as their minds. And there's an assortment of activities ranging from line dancing, ballroom dancing, tap dancing, theatricals, table tennis, lawn bowls, computer workshops, classes for the vision and hearing impaired, Scrabble, yoga, Pilates, Tai Chi, creative design, handicraft, arts classes, woodwork classes, parchment craft, quilting, music club, language classes, discounted travel trips, monthly talks and information sessions, and much, much more. It's no wonder it's such a busy and popular place. And I'm sure I've missed something, Tony, but that's a pretty good, I think, outline of what you do on a daily basis. And, of course, it houses our U3A group as well, and they provide lectures on a weekly basis. Council invests significantly in this centre each year, and we're pleased to be able to present this cheque to assist the centre in upgrading its kitchen and providing a portable PA system. Just so you realise that Councillors Boglari, Bishop and Ogilvie have joined me in providing Councillors small grant funding for this centre. Moving on to Special Olympics Australia and Redlands. The second cheque that we have is for an organisation that may not be as well known, certainly not as well known as the Donald Simpson Centre, but certainly does great work and is just as important to our community. Councillors Beard, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Bishop, Hardman and Hewlett have joined me in providing $7,500 in Councillor small grant funds for Special Olympics Australia Redlands Club Relaunch Project. The club is now a dedicated local organisation rather than being part of another group, and Council is extremely happy to assist in the relaunch of this wonderful organisation. As part of the relaunch Special Olympics Australia Redlands, they have to choose new colours, a new name and a new logo, all of which they hope to roll out from the beginning of 2016. Our small grants funding will assist in the purchase of polo shirts, shorts, singlets, jackets, track pants and other sporting equipment for the athletes and its members. Redlands City is extremely proud of its sporting achievements, and you know, for a community of our size, we punch way above our weight. And as a community, we also need to support our sports people, and Council is extremely pleased to be able to offer more support to Special Olympics Redlands. So if I might, Councillors, I might ask you to come forward to present these cheques, and also representatives from those two organisations to come forward in front of my desk here, and we'll present these cheques to you. I think we'll just do it all at once. I think that's probably all councillors can be involved in.
It arrived.
That's all right.
I'm trying not to hide Alan.
No, you're right. That's a good thing.
You get on the thing.
All right.
There you go. Is that better, Alan?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, councillors. Next item on the agenda is receipt and confirmation of minutes. Sorry, Mark. Oh, Paddy, you have one for us? My apologies, you do too. Councillor Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Our community is shaped by those visionaries and volunteers who live amongst us and spend so much of their time helping out others and giving themselves to improve our city. It can be humbling to see the works that others have done, usually over a lifetime, and feel that if we have some spare time ourselves, then perhaps we can't make a worthy contribution. To see that that is not the case, we need to look no further than Russell Island resident Brian Aitken, who passed away recently. Brian came to live on Russell Island with his wife Anita. They'd been travelling around Australia in retirement and stumbled across the islands and fell in love with the location and stayed. Brian was a retired engineer and stockbroker who thought of life in clear-cut terms. Despite his age and dealing with cancer, Brian decided he could contribute to the community and make a difference. 3 years ago, Brian approached me to discuss his vision for Russell Island, particularly in opening up the large tracts of bushland to hikers, birdwatchers and others who want to enjoy nature. He established the Bay Islands Conservation Group and brought in a diverse range of members. Together with myself and officers, we mapped and planned the first formalised bush walking trail through Turtle Swamp, which has become a favourite trail for people to walk. Brian was impatient to do more, sometimes at the frustration of officers, but Brian pushed on with his conservation group and have established two more longer trailways through Whistling Kite wetlands, which have also become popular with locals and tourists alike. Brian was also concerned about the growing number of cane toads on the islands and enlisted scientific help to trial methods to break the breeding cycle. And I can attest that there are very few cane toads around the street where Brian lived. In just 3 short years I came to know Brian and form a friendship, he proved to me that anyone with a passion to help build our community can do so. 2 days before he passed away, Brian asked me to come and see him. Brian was accepting of his fate, but not for the fate of the island's community. He spoke to me of his concern for the social and environmental sustainability of the islands, what he believed could be ways to resolve the issues, and as a true engineer, gave me paperwork on engineers in the industry I should contact. Brian is an example of how all of us have the ability to help in our community, at no matter what age, as long as we have the passion to do so. Thank you, Brian, for your contribution to Redlands.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Moving on to item 5.1, councillors, receipt and confirmation of minutes of a general meeting held on the 9th of September 2015 be confirmed. Moved Councillor Alan Beard, seconded Councillor Edwards. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Matters outstanding from previous general meetings, I'll ask our Acting Chief Executive Officer to present, please, Louise.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The one item is the making of Koala Local Laws Koala Map Area Mapping. We have workshopped that item and a report is being prepared and is scheduled for the 7th of October. Thank you.
Thanks, Louise. Item 7, is public participation, and I know that we have had one speaker advise that they'd like to address us this morning, so can I please have a mover and seconder the meeting adjourned for a 15-minute public participation segment to allow members of the public to address council on matters of local government interest. Moved Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Bishop. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Pam, if you'd like to just make your way to the microphone as you do, I'll just read the drill. You may have noticed that there is signage in the chambers regarding public participation at meetings. It is Council's usual practice to require any person wishing to address the meeting to state their name and suburb or organisation that they represent and the subject they wish to speak about. This information is recorded in the minutes of the meeting, which is a public document, which is available for inspection at Council's administration building and published on Council's website. I also need to advise you that the meeting is being recorded in audio video and that by speaking you acknowledge and agree that the recording video may be placed in the public domain. Any person addressing the meeting will state their name and suburb or organisation they represent and the subject they wish to speak about. Stand unless you're unable to do so. Act and speak with decorum. Be respectful and courteous. Make no comments directed at any individual council employee, councillor or member of the public, ensuring that all comments relate to council as a whole. And as chairperson, it is my responsibility to consider each application on its merits and consider any relevant matters in making my decision to allow or disallow a person to address the local government. It's also my responsibility to give priority to members of the public who have made a written application to the CEO to address the meeting and to determine the maximum number of speakers based on the number of persons wanting to speak and the time available. Each speaker has a maximum of 5 minutes, dependent on the number of speakers. And it's also my responsibility to withdraw the approval to address council before the time period has elapsed. Just a reminder that debate or discussion cannot be entered into at this time, and if there are other members of the public that wish to address council this morning and you require a hearing loop, please remain in your seat and we'll bring a microphone to you. As I said, we have had one written application. It's Pam Spence from Birkdale Progress Association, so I'll hand over to you, Pam. Please state your name, suburb, organisation you represent, and begin when you're ready. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor, councillors, my name is Pam Spence of Birkdale, and I'm president of Birkdale Progress Association, BPA. I'm here today to request that Redland City Council purchase Willard's Farm at 302 Old Cleveland Road East, Birkdale. Willard's Farm is now a rare find. It was established in the 1860s, over 150 years ago. At its height, the farm grew to more than 250 acres, demonstrating the efforts of pioneers James Willard and his wife Margaret. The current site consists of 2 acres, while the remainder of the farm is known as the Commonwealth land. Officers of the Department of Environment and Heritage reported that Willard's Farm is of a high level of significance to Queensland history. Queensland Heritage Council decided that the farm was more significant at the local heritage level. Redland City Council conducted its own studies and in 2012 concluded that Willard's Farm is a highly significant place which demonstrates historical, representative and aesthetic values. We know Redland City Council doesn't have a heritage policy, so what happens to this property that we've been told is so important? Has it been listed on the local register? Is the property protected from demolition? Again, BPA requests that Redland City Council purchase Willard's Farm. Our new Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, was quoted as saying that cities need to become economic assets for Australia. Well, this is exactly what the Willards property can become for the Redlands, an economic asset, an asset that has much to offer locals and tourists. Consider its location. Willards Farm is ideally situated near the main roads of Capalabar, close to Capalabar buses and also the Birkdale train station. And what does it have to offer? It can become a cultural hub for tourism that generates jobs. Locals and tourists alike will see a farm complex that still stands, reminding us of times past, tempting us with its secrets, providing real evidence to help understand Queensland history. It's a primary source, most valuable for students at all levels of education, allowing them to trace the stories of the people who have lived there. Inside the residence, you can see the original one-room dwelling with its solid front door and ancient door latch. Rooms have very narrow doorways. The kitchen is separated from the living areas. The progress of technology can be seen in the kerosene light in the main room and a gas light in the hallway. Wide verandas were added. Imagine, in times past, how pleasant taking tea on the veranda would be, with everyone kept cool by the shade of the pine trees, while looking across the gardens to the bunya pines and beyond. This setting would also appeal to locals and tourists, and perhaps it could become a favourite spot for wedding photos. One important element of the history of Willard's Farm is its involvement with World War II. Willard's Farm was commandeered by the Americans and became part of the Radio Communications Centre established by General MacArthur. It is said that Mrs. Cotton, the owner at the time, was the first to receive the message that the war was over in the Pacific. The future of Willard's Farm, as in its past, remains linked to the Commonwealth land and both have an uncertain future. The Commonwealth land is zoned community purpose and conservation and has strict rules to protect koala habitat. Yet we read in the draft city plan that the design for the Commonwealth land could be a special purpose precinct, possibly containing a mix of low impact export-oriented industries and training and tertiary education facilities. I don't assume to know what this consists of, but it doesn't sound small, nor community purpose, nor protecting of koala habitat. Combined with the restored Willards Farm, the Commonwealth land would be a wonderful asset for the people of the Redlands. Much of the land that surrounds the communications building and reserve site, highlighted in the Urbis report of 2015 as being historically significant, is heavily treed and would be a perfect location for koala habitat that overseas tourists would love. Perhaps a koala refuge or hospital could be established, an Indigiscape-style business with cafe could be added. Adjacent to the communications building and reserve site could be the location for opera in the Redlands or music under the stars. Shuttle buses would connect to public transport. Willards Farm and the history of radio would be bonus attractions. And as both properties are yet to be assessed by KIAC for Indigenous heritage artefacts, the potential that Willards Farm and the Commonwealth land have together to draw tourists is enormous. BPA requests that the Willards Farm buildings are not demolished. BPA requests that the buildings are not relocated. Their current setting couldn't be reproduced and the aesthetics would be lost. The old home would become a building. The baby's grave would be left behind and disappear forever. BPA asks you to purchase Willards Farm. A precedent was set in 1994 when Redland Shire Council purchased Birkdale Bush from a developer, so it can be done again. Quoting John Birmingham from the Sydney Morning Herald, "You do have to wonder when or if we'll ever learn, not just in Brisbane but in all of the major capitals. They've been around long enough now to have accumulated at least a small stock of old buildings, yet we keep tearing them down without a thought to the featureless landscape we're leaving in their place. Councillors, BPA asks you to preserve and protect this significant piece of our heritage for the people of the Redlands. BPA doesn't want Willards Farm to become a featureless landscape of 12 lots. BPA requests that you purchase Willards Farm. The community values our heritage. Over 150 years of history exists there that we can see and show others. History that can be valued and not forgotten." Thank you.
Any other speakers in the gallery this morning? There being none, I'll take a motion that we resume meeting proceedings. Moved Councillor Tolte, seconded Councillor Ogilvie. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Joyce. Next item is petitions. Now, I haven't been advised of any petitions or presentations.
Although not having an advisory of one, I do have one.
Thank you, Councillor Ogilvie.
Madam Chair, just on Sunday night, I was pleased to be able to farewell the Nippon Veterinary and Life Science University students from their visit that they conducted here to the Redlands. There was about 100 students, and we saw them off at the Lighthouse restaurant. They spent about 3 days here visiting Indigiscapes, looking for koalas, going to Stradbroke, looking at wildlife and so forth there, and, of course, stayed and ate within the Redlands, so all the economic benefits that that brought, but more importantly, they had some really interesting cultural exchanges with local students and local people, and I think they went home enriched, and Redlands has been enriched for the experience. Their visit, of course, is courtesy or due a lot to the good efforts of Dr. Tetsuo Mizuno, who is now the Honorary Ambassador for the Redlands. He's now bringing quite a lot of students to the Redlands, and we should be grateful for the work that he puts in for us. They presented me with a certificate of appreciation on Sunday night, and I'd just like to table that and forward that on to all of us in here in Council.
Thank you, Councillor Ogilvie. Any other presentations, councillors? Okay, moving on, order of business. Is there any motion to alter the order of business? Moving on then to item 10, which is just a reminder of your material personal interests and conflict of interest under the Local Government Act 2009. Councillors, there's a summary of those responsibilities in the back of your agenda. On to reports to Council. Councillor Edwards, the August 2015 monthly financial reports, please.
Item 11.1.1, August 2015 monthly financial reports. I move the Officer's recommendation to note the reports.
Moved Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Elliott. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
Just briefly, thank you. Operating surplus for August is 12.1 $3.97 million, with a favourable variance against budget of $3.07 million. The main factors attributing to this were bulk water consumption revenue greater than forecasts, higher fees and charges due to greater activity within the city, and timing of certain grant revenues. With the rating cycles, August has greater revenues which drove cash holdings higher to $140.72 million, of which $84.31 million relates to constrained reserves. Of the key performance indicators, the asset sustainability ratio, considered as a stretch target, remains below the 90% target, however, will improve substantially throughout the year as significant capital works projects are undertaken. The level of dependence on general rates revenue ratio has slipped slightly out of target of 37.5% to 39.79%. However, as it is a cyclical ratio, it is expected to fall back within the target range by the end of the financial year. And I'd like to thank the officers for another comprehensive report.
Thank you. Any speakers against, councillors? Questions or comments? There being none, I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Item 11.2.1, Councillor Tolte, decisions under delegated authority.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I call councillors' attention to item 11.2.1, decisions made under delegated authority for Category 1, 2 and 3 development applications, and ask that these be noted.
Move Councillor Tolte, seconded Councillor Beard. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Tolte?
No, Madam Mayor, it's all in the report. Thank you.
No questions or comments, councillors. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Tolte, 11.2.2.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I call councillors' attention to item 11.2.2, the appeals list, as was current at the 7th of September, and ask that this be noted.
So moved. Seconded by Councillor Gleeson. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Tolte?
No, Madam Mayor. It's in the report. Thank you.
Any questions, councillors? There being none, I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Item 11.2.3, Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Item 11.2.3 is an item relating to the 2018 Commonwealth Games Liaison Committee. I'd like to move the officer's recommendation.
Move Councillor Tolte. Seconded Councillor Edwards. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Tolte?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This is a matter that's come about through the hard work and commitment of Councillor Edwards and others. The report has been prepared in response to a Council resolution of the 12th of August 2015 that recommends the development of a structure for Redlands Commonwealth Games Liaison Committee to identify and coordinate opportunities for Redlands City associated with the 2018 Commonwealth Games. And I recommend this matter to councillors.
Any speakers against, councillors? Any other comments? Councillor Edwards?
Just briefly, I'd just like to thank the officers for putting this together. I'm particularly impressed with the calibre of the officers, the managers that are going to form this committee. I think that places us in a well position to take advantage of the opportunities to come to Redlands through the Commonwealth Games. And so just I support the proposal.
Any other comments, councillors? There being none, I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Item number 11.2.4, Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Item 11.2.4, amendments to adopted infrastructure charges resolution 2.1. I'd like to move the officer's recommendation.
Move Councillor Tolte. Seconded Councillor Edwards. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Tolte?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This is largely a housekeeping item. Officers have identified the needs for adapting our current infrastructure charges policy to be amended to be updated to current regulation and other matters. And for the most part, this supports small business and growth in the Redlands.
Thank you, Councillor Tolte. Councillor, speaker against? Comment, Councillor Boglari? Oh, you're a speaker against, Councillor Ogilvie. Comment, Councillor Boglari?
I just through you, I'd just like to ask the officer, David Jeans, I'd like to take this opportunity because at the moment on Facebook, as everywhere, there's a few comments being said about infrastructure and how council doesn't pay any percentage of the expense that it costs with subdivisions. And on page 17, the first dot point is continuing the practice of local government funding the gap. If David is in a position, I've been speaking to officers yesterday about this, about getting some words together about how council does pay for this shortfall. If he'd be able to just give a bit of an outline, because I think we need to take this opportunity to actually educate and bring the community on this journey with us, that there is a gap. I mean, we are, even you yourself are talking, you know, to the state government about this gap that both parties have actually continued with. And I was just wondering if David could have a comment, please.
There's always been a gap, but I think probably what I need to ask David to refer to is the content of the agenda item and what this means by Council's resolution in adopting this amendment. That will probably help explain that.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Yes, this proposed amendment to the resolution really is just administrative and fixing errors. The question that Councillor Boglari asks, and which is referred to in the report in terms of the funding gap, comes about because of the state's change to the infrastructure charging regime back in 2011. Council has consistently, lobbied the state to say this is the position that the state should change. And the important thing for Council is to make sure that we have an infrastructure plan that we can deliver and which is economically viable for us. I don't have the actual numbers in terms of what the gap is here in front of me, but certainly there is a shortfall based upon the state's policy.
I just think the community needs to understand that there is a cost to development, and it's not due to mismanagement on any behalf of council. It's that if this infrastructure is going to go in, and it needs to, then there is that cost and that percentage. And this includes not only the roads, but it includes our parks. And if we're going to not have this cost, then we have to somehow shave some of the gold plating, maybe some people think, but also some maybe of the necessary infrastructure like parks. And I just think it needs to be highlighted because it is a huge expense to the ratepayer.
I might just get David to respond to it. I think there's always benefits and opportunities and disadvantages to these sorts of things, but just responding.
I'm not saying council is doing this because we have to, we want to. I'm saying it's the state inflicting it onto us.
Yeah, I think it's probably a broader discussion, but David, if you just want to respond quickly.
It is a much broader discussion, but I will just note that council is aware that we're currently preparing a new local government infrastructure plan. That follows off the back of council's recent adoption of the planning scheme to go to public consultation. So now we know what we're planning for, we're currently doing the infrastructure planning, and that is to ensure that the infrastructure we need is provided to support future growth and is done so in, as I say, an economically responsible way, I guess.
Councillor Ogilvie, a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just financial implications, it was just a little kind of vague for me to fully get a grip on what the impact is. Have we quantified it?
As we've noted, really these changes are fixing errors and administrative changes. The only policy change, I guess, is to do with we've put in a definition for a court area, because what we've found is that some of our low-impact indoor recreational-type uses, such as yoga classes and the like, were generating a charge which was excessive. The financial impact for council is really negligible because we don't see many of those types of applications.
Okay. Thank you. Councillor Elliott, question?
Can I drag it on to that comment?
I'll comment.
Just to the public and Councillor Boglow, happy with what she said. But if you look at the background on this report, the community should look at the background. It actually tells you what the go is. And then if you look further into the report, I can remember when this came in, I think a lot charge for infrastructure was $41,000 in actual, and it was told to go down to $28,000. So you're funding the bit for every block in between. Simple as that.
Would you like to sum up, Councillor Tolte? I don't think there's any other speakers. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So the background's been mentioned, so I might mention a little further. So Council resolved to make AICR 2.1 on the 30th of June 2014 for the purposes of satisfying subsequent amendments to the Planning Act through the Sustainable Planning and Infrastructure Charges and Other Legislation Amendment Act 2014, which introduced the state's statutory reforms to the Local Government Infrastructure Planning and Charging Framework on the 4th of July 2014. The more significant of those legislative changes included, as Councillor Boglari noted, continuing the practice of local governments funding the gap between what developers are required to pay towards new urban infrastructure through cap charges and the real capital costs, a continuation of no indexation to the maximum rate of the cap charges, introduction of conversion applications for non-trunk infrastructure to trunk with appeal rights, a process for applicants to request recalculation of infrastructure offsets refunds on actual value rather than default plan values, extension of permissible change and permit extension provisions to allow amended infrastructure charges notices to be issued, a process where credits must be given for existing use rights and approvals and any other lawful development that can be undertaken without a further permit, and new appeal rights to allow the application of credits to be challenged. And those are the matters that have had to be considered when preparing this report. Those are complex matters, and it takes quite a bit of understanding to be able to understand the broader implications of those. But I would suggest to the councillors that we support this amendment package.
I put the motion. Councillors, those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Item point 11.2.5, I'm going to ask Councillor Beard to take the chair, declare I have a conflict of interest in regards to an in-kind contribution to my campaign. Also have it noted, please, that I'm not required to leave the chair. I do that at my own choice to provide further transparency. Thank you.
Councillor Boglari.
I would also like to declare what could be a perceived conflict. As I used to own the property, I did put VPOs on the trees. I didn't mention that last time I did my declaration and had a complaint put in against me on that one, so I'm just making sure I include that this time. But I'd also like to make it clear I've had no financial dealings with the owner of the property, as I did not sell it to him at all. I sold it to another person who then onsold it onto him. So I've had absolutely no dealings with this resident, and I will vote in the community's interest and stay in the room.
Thank you. Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Councillor Beard. I'd just like to... I may have a perceived conflict of interest because I was on the leadership committee for the Koala Fun Run and also the Run for Evans 48-hour charity festival, and the applicant's business donated in-kind signage to that...
Thank you, Councillor Hewlett. All right, Councillor Gleeson. Anyone else know this fellow?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'll throw it in there also. We just recently held the Bayside Blues Festival for the second year down in Capelbar, and the applicant provided us with a big screen TV as a committee. It's more so probably for the Capelbar Rotary Club, but I am on that committee and one of the organisers of the festival. But there's no money change hands. There's no real benefit. I'd like to stay in the room and vote in the interest of the community.
Thank you, Councillor Gleeson. Councillor Tolley, item 11.2.5.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Item 11.2.5, which is ROL 005831, relating to 257 to 259 Wellington Street, Ormiston, is an application for subdivision from one lot into two lots, and I would like to move the officer's recommendation.
Moved by Councillor Tolley, seconded by Councillor Gleeson.
Thank you, Mr.
Councillors,
Chair.
Councillors, just before you start, Julie, this is an item that's going to have, I think, some repercussion, or at least there is a good deal of interest in the broader community. And so I'm going to ask Officer Chris Fies to just give us a brief overview of the item before we discuss it, if that would be okay. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. The item before us is a 1-into-2-lot subdivision proposal at 257 to 259 Wellington Street in Ormiston. The land is zoned within the Environmental Protection Zone. Within that zone, the minimum lot size prescribed in a probable solution is 20 hectares. The size of the lot at present is just shy of 1 hectare. It's about 9,000 square metres, so it's well under that minimum lot size at present. The proposal involves subdividing that into two lots with a parkland lot, so a 4,000, 3,000 and a 2,000 square metre open space lot along the foreshore. The key issue for the council to consider is whether this proposal maintains and enhances the environmental values of the land and the locality. That's the key outcome in the planning scheme that sought to be achieved. The report goes into the assessment in detail around that, but to summarise, the key elements are that through the subdivision, the development does result in a open space lot that is brought into public ownership that will be revegetated. That north-south corridor along the foreshore is considered the critical corridor in that area, as discussed on other development applications in this area. The other point is the fact that the development won't result in any removal of non-juvenile koala habitat trees, which is a key point in the koala SP, the state planning regulatory provision which applies to the site. So it doesn't result in any koala tree loss, and a condition requires the imposition of a building envelope on proposed lot 2 to ensure those trees are protected or given the best protection in the future. And that building envelope is located at least 10 metres from those trees to ensure that there's no exemptions under Local Law 6 in that regard. The application is recommended for approval subject to conditions as outlined in the report.
Thanks, Chris. Stay with us if you don't mind. Councillor Tolley.
Thank you, Mr Chair. As you've just heard, the application is recommended for approval by the officers. The officers have addressed the matter from the perspective, as they're required to under planning regulation, protecting, maintaining and enhancing the key values, and they have established through this application that while they are protecting, maintaining and enhancing the key values, they are also additionally embellishing the north-south corridor so that there is a positive environmental outcome from this development application, and that is part of the reason for recommendation for approval.
Speakers against? Councillor Boglary.
Thank you. Firstly, I'd like to flag that if this does not get up, I have an alternate motion that I will be presenting. Does that go up on the?
Yeah, we'll put that up. So you're presenting an amendment to the motion?
No, I'm flagging a alternate motion.
Alternate motion?
I have.
We have to determine this motion first.
Okay. On this actual one, we've already heard today once about preserving values. Our resident spoke about preserving the value of heritage. This property is also got values to the greater community, and that is environmental. To me, the application doesn't comply with either planning scheme, past or present, past or the draft, as it fragments the land. The strategic intent of both planning schemes is obvious, that this is to stay as a whole block. We have got wildlife corridors running along the coastline along the east, and we've also got the north-south corridor along Hilliards Creek. They come together at the northern end of Ormiston, which has always strategically been an environmental asset to the area. Anybody buying in this area, and I know the four large the blocks there, they've all bought since 2006, so they've actually all bought while this zoning was on. Now, when you buy a property, you do your due diligence, and so this is very much a case of beware. This is actually not a developer, but due to even today, you can see it's just a mum and dad, and they are actually really great community representatives, and they're involved in many things, as you could see today by the number of councillors that actually had to declare something. But unfortunately, in this case, they have bought an acreage block in an area with significance. In the assessment, even though it was zoned previously environmental management, which is no reduction in existing lot sizes, it is now in the draft, and under the CODI principle, draft planning scheme should be also referred to. So it has now come forward under environmental protection. I think that one's right, sorry, I can't read my own writing.
And in the, under the planning scheme, there are no minimum lot sizes actually for this. And it, both the past planning scheme and the draft planning scheme are there to protect these values, and they both talk against reconfiguration in this area. In the assessment, the decision has come down to whether or not the application of this development will maintain and enhance the environmental values of the site. Now, Council has assessed this by saying that the ownership of the eastern front block will actually be coming to Council, and that with the replanting it has it will protect it. I disagree with this because with the fragmentation of this block and non-fauna-friendly fencing going in, it is actually going to restrict the site to wildlife movement across this area. I also believe that it could cause a precedent for other blocks in this area, and we could have other applications coming in. Fragmentation of areas such as this cause stress not only to koalas but to other wildlife, and we have got minimal areas such as this left in Ormiston, and even in our new city plan documentation we refer to Ormiston as the green leafy suburb. We have to preserve this value. Sorry, I'm just trying to see where I'm at. Basically, that's it, because I cannot see... We speak to our public and we speak to the residents in Ormiston just recently when another subdivision happened about the planning scheme. And now we have got the values of this area in our planning scheme. We've had it zoned since 2006 to protect those values. And now, in my eyes, and I believe in the public eyes, we're actually going against our own intent. So that's why I'd like to flag, if this does go down, I would like to move the other motion where this is not approved.
Thanks, Councillor Bugler. Before I go to a minor amendment to the conditions, could I just ask Councillor Boglari, you're speaking against the motion, and I obviously trying to influence councillors to support a refusal. Are there any planning grounds that you'd like to submit that on which this application could be refused?
Yeah, the planning grounds are the intent of the present planning scheme and the intent of the draft planning scheme is that this area is protected, and in the reconfiguration code it says no fragmentation of these lots, and that is what this is doing.
Chris, could you respond to that, please?
As I said, the key element to the council needs to consider is whether this proposal maintains and enhances the environmental values of the site. Both the outcomes in the current planning scheme and the draft planning scheme reflect that. That's what this zone is intended for, whether it be the environmental protection zone under the current scheme or the environmental management zone under the draft scheme. So as the report goes into, and as I summarise, officers believe that this proposal does enhance those environmental values. Through the enhancement of that foreshore corridor and that coming into public ownership, which wouldn't otherwise be realised unless this application came about, other than through council's purchase or acquisition of that land. It also allows us the ability through this proposal to impose a building envelope on that balance lot to restrict the built form on that lot and ensure protection of those trees into the future.
Thanks, Chris. Councillors, before I go any further, there is, and I've missed this, a proposed amendment to condition number 25. Could we bring that up, Joyce, please? And that is the inclusion of the words, after provide fencing along the open space boundaries, lot 290, the addition of the words, and the northern and southern boundaries of lot 1 and 2. And I require someone other than the mover and the seconder, Louise, to propose that amendment, so that the amendment becomes a motion. Moved by Councillor Elliott, seconded by Councillor Edwards. Now, we will now vote on the amendment. Those in favour of the amendment? The amendment. Those in favour of the amendment? Aye. The amendment is carried unanimously. Thank you. Now, the amendment becomes the motion. Just a moment. I had a speaker for in Councillor Tolley, had a speaker against in Councillor Boglari. Not yet. No, not yet. Not
I'd like
yet.
To.
Not
it, yet. It's in relation to what Chris,
sorry,
the officer
Councillor
just said.
Councillor O'Leary, I'll come back to you.
I cannot ask a question of what the officer just said.
I'll come back to you. Councillor for the motion. No, Councillor speaking for the motion. For the motion. Okay, there are no speakers for the motion. Now I'll take your comment.
Oh, just a question. Thank you for the information about enhancing it, and I understand that's what it's actually come down to. But Councillor Beard asked, was it against the reconfiguration code of not fragmenting the block?
Chris?
So we have to separate the current scheme and the draft scheme. So the draft scheme talks about not fragmenting the land. The current scheme uses different language, but effectively has the same outcome. That is, there's a minimum lot size in the probable solution of 20 hectares. It doesn't comply with that, neither does the existing lot. But the overall outcome that sits above that is the intent of the zone is to maintain and enhance the environmental values. So that's effectively what we're considering, what council is considering. Does this proposal maintain and enhance the environmental values of this land and the locality?
Thanks
but,
Chris.
But the reconfiguration code says no fragmentation of the land. Put aside whether it enhances the environmental value or not. The reconfiguration code says no fragmentation of the land in the present planning scheme and the draft planning scheme.
As a specific outcome, the key point is to look at the... So one code doesn't work in isolation. Council needs to consider the codes as a whole, and it's a balanced assessment. So you're looking at the zone code, and what does the zone code say in reflection to the reconfiguration code? So the reconfiguration code prescribes a minimum lot size. And its intent is to not fragment the land. That's in order to achieve the zone code's intent to enhance and maintain the values of that site. So they relate to each other. It's not fragmenting to be able to achieve that zone intent. So really it is about determining whether that zone intent is achieved.
So nothing can be looked at in isolation, but we have a reconfiguration... Oh, sorry, through you... nothing can be looked at in isolation, but the reconfiguration code in both planning schemes says no more fragmentation. The zone says that we are to enhance the value. Recently we changed the SPRP because when you change an SPRP, it has to be done in conjunction with the development application, so yes, it is relevant.
We changed the designation, but yes. The report clearly states that that's had no impact on the development application.
But we changed it because various trees had been damaged in storm or whatever, but that has now... What effect did that have on this?
Councillor Boglary, the report says it's had no effect on the application. Okay, thanks.
I seek to differ on that, but what I'm trying to point out is that we had a state SPRP, so on a state level, this block has been recognised for environmental asset and values. We've had two planning schemes which have both recognised its environmental value. We've got a reconfiguration code that says it shouldn't be fragmented any further. So, for me, it's going against the intent of the strategic plan.
Okay. Of course, Councillor Boglary, you're entitled to that opinion. The officers have given you a professional assessment. David James would like to make a comment.
I'd just like to confirm the current planning scheme in terms of the reconfiguration code doesn't talk about land in the environmental protection zone not being fragmented. The only parts of the city where it does specifically say no further fragmentation is in the emerging urban zone and the rural non-urban zone. It doesn't actually say it for the environmental protection zone.
Thanks, David. Comment, Councillor Bishop? No, Councillor Boglary.
Can I please have clarification on that point?
Okay.
In the new planning scheme, is that what you just said? It doesn't say... That's what I wanted, just clarification.
The current planning scheme, reconfiguration code, doesn't talk about fragmentation in the environmental protection zone. The draft scheme does, but council can't give any weight to the draft scheme. In terms of the COTI principle, we're too early in the process. The scheme itself is just going through public consultation.
we can start to give emerging policy more weight once it's been tested by the community.
Councillor Bishop, did you have a comment or a question?
Yes, I did. Just a question. And it may well be touched on by what Officer Jeans just said, but the question is, in terms of enhance and maintain, is it an or an and?
Chris?
Sorry, the Chair, it's an and. That's the intent of the name.
Councillor Ogilvie.
Yeah, just firstly, in regard to the Coady Principle, my understanding of the Coady Principle is that it, an imminent introduction of a planning regulation or tool is made more important and allowed to be given more weight as it gets further on in the process. So even if it's early on in the process, it still can be given weight. And that's as it gets further on through the process, goes through community consultation and so forth, then you can give it more and more weight. But it's clear that Council has a strategic intent in mind, which is no fragmentation in our current, in our future planning scheme, and that's what the councillor is arguing. But what this comes down to, seriously, is that you are trying to tell us, councillors, that putting a house in the middle of this area is going to be good for the koalas and the environment of that area. I mean, seriously, I mean, is that what it's come to? The idea that, you know, putting a driveway and a house and the clearing that's going to go around that, et cetera, et cetera, is actually good for the environment and the koalas in that area. I mean, if that's what it's come down to, come on.
Councillor Agler, you heard the officer's assessment. And it'll...
dictates...
And it needs no further...
I think common sense dictates, Mr Chair, that, you know, a house in the middle of an environmental zone is not good for the environment. We know that koalas do not travel in lines. We know that they need areas to roam around and move in, and we know that areas like this, which are blank or vacant currently of trees, can be enhanced and should be enhanced. We also know that koalas are dying in this city, and there's only a few hubs left. This is one of them. If we go down this path, set precedents like this, you know, say goodbye to them. Seriously.
Councillor Ogilvie, you heard the officers tell you that some 3,000 square metres of land will come into council ownership that would not otherwise, that the environmental corridor will be enhanced as a result of that, that there will be fencing provided, fauna fencing provided on this, both properties now, both lots, that wouldn't ordinarily be there. And in the professional opinion of the officers, this satisfies the condition of enhancing the environmental values. Whether you agree with that or not is irrelevant, but I find it offensive, that comment that you made with regard to the officers. There'll be no other comment. Councillor Tolte, please sum up.
Thank you, Mr Chair. As I mentioned earlier, the officers have done their assessment. They did that with the view to protecting, maintaining, enhancing the key values while additionally embellishing the north-south corridor. Councillor Boglari has raised specific outcomes, and as we've all are well aware, in the current planning regulation regime, specific outcomes fall away under probable solutions, and here we sit. So I recommend the officer's recommendation to councillors. Thank you.
Okay, I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Hardman, Councillor Beard. Those against? Councillor Bishop, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Ogilvie, Councillor Boglari.
Thank you, councillors. Next item is 11.2.6, Councillor Tolte. Community Facility, 286 Bloomfield Street, Cleveland.
Thank you. I call Councillor's attention to item 11.2.6, which is the Community Facility proposed to be at 286 Bloomfield Street, Cleveland, and move the officer's recommendation.
Move Councillor Tolte, seconded Councillor Gleeson. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Tolte?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This is a application to provide for a facility in Redland to provide support services to people who are victims of domestic violence And probably the main thing to note here is that this is not an application for a shelter or a place where people will be housed. It is a place where the services will be provided so that people can be referred there and then referred on to other services.
Speaker again, Councillor Ogilvie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Firstly, just want to say I have the greatest sympathy for the services that this organisation provides. And I am sympathetic to the fact that they aren't as financially they're not as flush as other organisations might be, and so therefore might be looking for something that's a non-commercial and more in line with their budget. However, the bottom line on this is that this is a commercial use, five to six staff with clients visiting them in a residential zone, and there are adjacent residents, some of whom are here today, and I have to congratulate them on the quality submission that they put to this application, who will feel the impacts of this. Our sympathy for this organisation and for what they do should not get in the way of the fact that residents who buy in an area should be able to expect that if the house next to them is zoned residential, that it will continue to be used for residential purposes. It seems a simple thing, as I say, as blind as we might be to that because of the very, very good purposes that this organisation is committed to, we should remember that that is an important principle in our planning scheme.
Speaker 4? No? Comment?
Mayor, thank you very much for allowing me for comment. I have an activity in my area, similar. I have a couple of these similar, not domestic violence in my area sort of thing like that. They've been there 20 years, you know, come to see me. We've had no problems. People come and go. You would not know next door as far as that goes. And as Councillor Telly pointed out, this is not a centre where people go to, you know, as a violence centre, but it's an administrative concern. So I'd like to allay the community's fears in Cleveland that there's going to be any other...
Just point out for the council's information, this isn't a shelter home.
No, appreciate
this
that. I'm talking apples with apples. Yeah. So I just want to assure the community, I realise Councillor Ogilvie's position, but certainly I have had no problem in my time in 18 years in Alexandria.
Councillor Gleeson, were you wanting to speak? Yep.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. I'm certainly going to be supporting the motion. I understand Councillor Ogilvie's concerns, but I mean, this is a really hot topic Australia-wide at the moment. And let's go out and put one of these in every suburb in the city at the moment. It's great. It's going to be good for the city.
Comment, Councillor Hardman?
Just quickly. Yes, this borderlines onto my division, and I did have a resident call me, and I am sympathetic to their concerns here. But for me personally, the bigger picture here is just such a serious manner, and I wouldn't feel comfortable with saying I support, you know, a group that's working to support our community in need and then not take the action behind it. If this was happening to a family member, you just need that support.
Councillor Bishop?
Yeah. Totally support the emotional and social discourse around this and the importance of it through you, Madam Mayor. I'd just like to ask a question that relates to the precedent that this may appear to set in the instance that another entity of a similar description, a non-profit entity with a similar amount of workers, would come to us in future and apply for the similar dispensation. Does this set a precedent that could open up opportunities that may impact things beyond the heat of this particular moment and this decision?
I'll have the officer respond, but I think it's fair to acknowledge the QPP, the Queensland Planning Provisions, which allows community housing without any notification. That's the actual, I think it's called community residents in the Queensland Planning Provisions, which means that they are exempt from actually applying. In this case, it's not community residents, but has a similar benefit to social outcomes in our community. But I'll get David to respond to your question more directly.
Thank you. Just a point of clarification, that's exactly the precedent that I want to just make sure that we're...
That's not a precedent, that's state legislation. So I'll get David to respond. So the QPP is state legislation.
This would set a precedent because every application has to be considered on merit, but I think it's worth noting that although this is a residential zone, the planning scheme does anticipate some non-residential uses, and it puts some tests in place for that. So there's really three key elements to non-residential uses in the current planning scheme. It says they should be located on a collector or higher order road, which this proposal is. It says they should be less than 400 square metres gross floor area, which this is. And that's important because those non-residential uses should be small in scale, and this meets that test. The third component is that the planning scheme seeks to have them co-located with other similar uses. That doesn't apply in this particular case. They aren't co-located, and the reason for that is they're looking for a discrete facility which is separate to other uses. So in summing up, it's not a precedent, and the planning scheme does anticipate some non-residential uses.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Wendy? Councillor Bogley.
You're right. I was just going to say that in every application we have to look at planning grounds, and even though this is an emotional one and it is definitely a need in our community, which has just been identified by the state, giving us the money for such an organisation, that we, as councillors, we have looked at the planning grounds on this one, and we had a workshop yesterday which alleviated my fears about exactly what was going to operations were going to happen in this establishment, but also the parking, because I think that was a concern of residents. There is on-street parking on the main road, but there's also off-street parking sufficient for any clients. And as the officer, David Jeans, just said, that the one part of the planning scheme which it didn't comply with is that it's not co-located with other facilities. With domestic violence, women have to be very careful if they're actually going to make that break away, even just to get some information which could assist them, or whether they are actually leaving to go on to a refuge or something. If they walk into where it is at the moment at the courts, if they're being followed, it's very obvious to the perpetrator what they're doing. So having it in a house is a much safer environment for any of the victims or anybody who needs information, which is why now that all the other planning grounds have absolutely comply, and as the Mayor mentioned, community residents, if it was one of those, if it came under that, this wouldn't even come to council whatsoever. So on the planning grounds, as well as the need for the community, I'll be voting for this one.
Councillor Beard.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Very briefly, just worthy of note that this was an impact assessable development and received two submissions. And on page 41 and 42, you can see the officer's response to those submissions. And the one in particular, I think, that's of interest to me, Councillor Ogilvy suggested that you buy a house in a residential precinct or an urban precinct, you expect your neighbourhood to remain that way, and I guess that's true for us all, but it clearly says that the proposed facility is not an inconsistent use in the urban residential zone. I had a similar situation a couple of years ago, as Councillor Elliott alluded to, with the proposal to build a church in the middle of an urban residential zone, and that was the subject of a number of very large and noisy community meetings, and 100 submissions were made on that application. It was eventually approved. The group's been in there now for 3 years. I've never heard a single word from a soul. They are a wonderful neighbour, and the issue is non-existent, and I think that'll be the case here.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Councillor Beard, Councillor Edwards, you're next. Sorry.
Thank you. Just a quick one. I'm just looking at the my comments in relation to the impact that this facility have. And I read here it's only going to be open weekdays from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and there's only going to be 5 to 10 clients per day, and no one's going to be living at the premises. I think probably me as a neighbour myself, I probably have more impact on my neighbours than this does. So I can't really see any tangible impact on it.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Any other speakers? Look, if I could just make a comment also, I think we can talk about impacts in lots of different ways, directly and indirectly, but the fact is that 4% of the domestic violence orders in this state come from our magistrates' courts, both in Cleveland and in Wynnum. There's been no secret about the lobbying effect that we've had on the state gaining funding and finally getting regional services in this city. We need to make sure that we get the best possible broad impact, positive impacts for those people who are vulnerable in our community. And I think in this instance, you know, this is where a performance-based planning scheme does actually serve the greater interest of the city. And I also would like to acknowledge the fact that before this came to officers and to council, I did speak to councillors in regards to this prospect, this particular purchase, to ensure that there was support so that we wouldn't be refusing this here and wasting well-earned lobbied money trying to defend this in a planning and environment court. I think it's fair to say that everyone who lives in this country can potentially be impacted by domestic violence in their own street if you look at the facts. So this is our small part that we play as a community to make sure those most in need are well serviced, and this is just one small step. It's not certainly the solution, and I'm just relieved that finally we've got people in our community being able to access these services. So with that, I think the application suits that need, and I'll hand back to Councillor Tolte to sum up.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I won't add further to that except to say that I'd like to reiterate the fact that it's the discreet position that is a priority for the operators over the financial considerations raised by Councillor Ogilvie, that people who may come to this service in order to be referred to other services in regard to domestic violence, they need that discreet access so that they aren't in the full public view of a commercial area. So that same desire for being discreet, I think, will also ensure that they are good neighbours and that the parking concerns have been addressed.
So with that, councillors, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Bishop, Gleeson, Beard, Tolte, Elliott, Edwards, Hewlett, Hardman, Boglari, Williams. Those against? Councillor Ogilvie. Councillors, there are no mayoral minutes, but we do have a notice of motion from Councillor Ogilvie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the motion.
Motion's up on the board there, councillors. Councillor Ogilvie's moved 14.1.1, and Councillor Boglari is seconding that motion. Councillor Ogilvie, would you like to speak to it?
I would, thank you, Madam Chair. I think we'd all agree that the Redlands needs to develop a more diversified local economy. 60% of our residents travel out of the area for work, and we all would agree that council needs to find some non-rates income sources. Our rural areas are one obvious place we can look towards for improving our local economy. From 1996 to 2011, the number of people employed in agriculture fell by over 60%, from 851 full-time jobs to 313 jobs. We have commissioned a rural futures strategy which was designed, or we hoped would take up this issue. We noted that strategy, but we haven't acted on any of its recommendations. Some of the recommendations from that strategy were that we want to try to enable rural industries to diversify, adjust, innovate and value add. We also want them to establish new initiatives and alter existing programs informed by cutting edge new thinking and practice from around Australia and internationally. We want to encourage primary and support industries to remain in the Redlands to halt rural decline. We want to create new rural businesses and jobs to diversify the economic base and skills development in the area. We want to trial leading practice production strategies to optimise utilisation of available resources, and want to enhance infrastructure and investment opportunities in rural precincts. One of the issues for our local area, as far as rural production goes, is that we have concreted over the best soil in the area, and we know that the poultry industry is threatened by globalisation and competing businesses with better economies of scale, not to forget to mention the encroach of the urban footprint. It is worth remembering, as we discuss this motion, that the poultry industry has odour issues and that aquaculture does not. And it is worth noting that old poultry sheds potentially make for good aquaculture sheds, and that their production methods are remarkably similar. Council needs to look for businesses of this sort, industries of this type. These are the sorts of businesses and industries that are environmentally friendly and enhance the Redlands brand. They have the potential to reinvigorate our rural areas. They have the potential to provide for local food security. They have the potential to create sustainable long-term jobs. They are scalable and they are open to small-scale entrants coming from a low skill base. The business that is mentioned there at dot point one is Fish Protech. It is a locally based company and it could certainly be part of achieving these goals. I'm agnostic about being involved or council being involved in one company or another, but this particular company, because it is local, well established and has a particular business model which I will soon detail, is in my mind an obvious choice for council to be partnering with. The company has been in operation for over 25 years and it has exported its technology to other countries. It utilises modular tanks, and proprietary technology developed by some of the world's leading experts in this area. A minimum size facility needs about 3,000 metres squared and will employ about 10 people. Crucially, it supports the farmers who use its technology, thus enabling unskilled entrepreneurs to enter the industry. It isn't factory-sized aquaculture. It is boutique aquaculture. And they cover the technology, the proprietary equipment, installation, startup services, operational support and training, supply of operational requirements, post-harvest and processing techniques of the fish produced in collaboration with the primary producer, thus taking out many of the potential difficulties that primary producers may face in not having the full suite of skills. This business is wanting to establish in southeast Queensland and is wanting to locate somewhere close to the population centres of Brisbane, Gold Coast and the Sunshine Coast and, of course, the export facilities of the port and airport. In addition, it has demonstrated lower production costs than alternative aquaculture production systems. Its systems produce pathogen and bacteria-free sashimi-grade seafood and it reticulates treated water in an energy-efficient way so that it can be powered by solar panels. I have suggested also that we consider the Runnymede site, but by no means do I think that this is the only site we should consider. The Runnymede site, though, is well located, has existing infrastructure that could be used and could coexist nicely with the ethos and existing uses that have been envisaged for that site. The idea of an exhibition sustainable food production facility has been successful overseas. I believe that the Sunshine Coast Council is investigating such a facility in order to facilitate their own agribusiness clusters that they are developing. Such a facility could even draw tourists and students and be an exemplar project for other industry projects and sits well within the biosphere notions that were originally developed around the Runnymede site. The vision I have is that potentially, we have a sustainable aquaculture industry in the Redlands. To start with, though, Council needs to support the setup of a demonstration farm. From there, in collaboration with the community, the opportunity exists to extend the farms into other parts of the Redlands where suitable land is available. It is not impossible that Redlands may one day have a fully mature industry servicing local, national and international markets, an industry that supports hundreds of jobs, including smart jobs in research and development. All this starts with a step, and I hope that Grounds Council will agree to take that step.
Speaker against, Councillor Beard.
Wow. This is bizarre. I hope you all took that in. Did you all get that, word for word? Because that's the first time we've heard it. It's now 5 to 11... in a general meeting, and we're asked to vote on this motion. We have mayor-councillor meetings every 2 weeks. We have workshops 3 days a week. This motion was lodged a week and a half ago. We have a pre-meeting yesterday morning at which we asked Councillor Ogilvie for some information. He said, I'll send you some. And we got it at 11 o'clock yesterday, some information, but nothing. Nothing like we just heard. And now we're asked to vote on this motion. This is bizarre. I'm going to vote against the motion simply because the process is ridiculous and it's insulting to be asked to vote on this motion with no information and no attempt to provide us with information until now. And if the councillor would like to withdraw the motion and suggest that we workshop it, then I might well vote in favour of it. But I won't be supporting it today.
Speaker for the motion, Councillor Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Councillor Beard has just mentioned that he seems nonplussed at the fact that he hasn't been involved in this. I dispute that. In this particular instance, I can understand that he may feel like he's missed out on an opportunity, but there's plenty of opportunity to ask, and as councillors are often encouraged to do, to ask questions. I applaud Councillor Ogilvy for bringing this forward. I did have some misgivings, but I'm very grateful that he's spoken to it. Some of my misgivings were around having a particular association with an entity, a particular business, a specific business, and mentioning a specific business. The reason I'm particularly grateful that you've brought this forward, Councillor Ogilvy, through you, Madam Mayor, is it gives us an opportunity to do the one thing that we did not know was possible when the Rural Future Strategy, what I believe is the most exemplary document, was landed in front of us. We all went, well, a majority of us said, how is this going to be implemented? And because of a lack of collective imagination on behalf of councillors...
Pull your head in. Councillors now, come on. Councillors, do you want me to have a recess so that you can have this discussion outside of chambers? So you're speaking to the motion, councillor?
Point of order, ma'am.
What's your point of order, councillor?
I'd like Clancy Gleeson to withdraw his comment.
Well, I think both councillors could withdraw their comments and get on with the motion.
I think you're the chair. You can pull Councillor Bishop at your leisure, but I think Councillor Gleeson...
Councillor Gleeson, would you please apologise for your comment, and I'll ask Councillor Bishop to withdraw his comment as well, please.
I apologise for making that comment, Madam Mayor.
Councillor Bishop.
Madam Mayor, can I ask for clarification as to what grounds I need to withdraw?
You've made a personal attack on councillors and their decision not to adopt a particular strategy, so if you could please...
I was just drawing an observation of a...
Your observations are wonderful, but you're talking to a motion. Can I please ask you to withdraw that so you can move on with the debate?
I'll withdraw the fact
Thank
that
you.
I was...
It's because people weren't agreeing with that particular issue, so...
Well, what I'll point out is that in the Rural Future Strategy, it speaks about specifically primary production and the non-loss of incredibly vital assets that Redland City produces. What Councillor Ogilvy referred to a moment ago with regards to the Northern, the Sunshine Coast and the Moreton Bay Regional Council was an extraordinary gathering of Australia's first food and agribusiness food cluster. There were people from around the nation gathering around the very same philosophy that was in the core of our Rural Future Strategy. They were coming together to talk about the specific opportunities that their regions presented. People from Perth, South Australia, the Riverland, Victoria, across the nation. They met in Moreton Bay, and surprise, surprise, what was the one industry that Moreton Bay identified as their specific niche that they're clustering around? Strawberries. They produce 40% of the state's strawberries. Now, the reason I'm specifically referring to this motion is because Councillor Ogilvy is doing something that our current economic development framework and proposed path forward does not necessarily address, which is the niche, small industry gaps that are outside of the 8 predetermined focus areas. This allows innovation, it allows collaboration, and where I had my misgivings around the Fish Protech as a specific business and having a relationship with them, I do see that there are opportunities for a civic...
To the Councillor, agriculture is actually in our economic development framework.
Rural industries, and I'm very grateful for a great amount of lobbying to ensure that Rural Futures stayed in there, because it wasn't originally, and so I'm grateful to see...
Just correcting you, it is in our economic development framework.
I'm very grateful that the process that it actually did get included, because it wasn't originally, but it is now, and it opens up the opportunity and the pathway for exactly this sort of stuff, and I'd love to see it happen. So, and to come back to my first point, which was regarding Councillor Beard's concern about non-inclusion, the very thing that this is asking for is that a report back to council on this opportunity gives us exactly that opportunity to explore that. So I'm sure that will reconcile the part of you that feels a little disenfranchised by it coming to us the way it did.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. Councillor Tolte, speaker against.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Yes, I am speaking against, and I agree completely with Councillor Beard. To bring a motion like this with so much information and apparently so much possibility and not bother to even tell us about it or educate us, update us, whatever you want to call it, any councillor around this table can bring a motion, and if you seriously want it considered, then quite clearly you provide people with the information they need to consider it in a serious way. I will, however, because I don't believe we should cut off our nose to spite our face, so to speak, consider voting for the motion were it amended to drop out points 2 and 3 and just ask for the report.
Speaker 4. Councillor Boglari.
Just for once, can we put personalities? We're in chambers and personality should stay outside.
So, Councillor, I think you just need to talk to the motion.
Well, I think that needs to be just sorted.
Well, thank you,
Councillor. We boast that we are leaders, that we are in an innovative council, and here's an opportunity to actually prove it. We have discussed exactly this type of businesses for as long as I've been in here, and recently, you know, Councillor Bishop has absolutely smothered us with various videos on exactly this type of niche entrepreneurship programs, and I thank Councillor Ogilby for bringing it to us, and to say that we haven't considered anything like this, maybe not this one in particular, but is inaccurate. We have to be smarter in Redlands. We don't want factories with a lot of pollution. We don't want our waterways and our, you know, bushland totally decimated. And this is what we need to do. And I've actually got a spot in my area where I'd absolutely love something like this to be there. Because when you look at the tourism dollars that various other councils are actually making on the small market and such economic development such as this, it's just amazing, and that domino effect financially throughout the community flows. And we need job growth, and we need it to be sustainable other than development where people come in and build and then those jobs have disappeared. Something like this will employ, do you have any idea how many people would be employed or something like this? 10, was it?
So it's 10 per farm, 10 per 3,000 metre squared farm.
Right.
So, I mean, the opportunity for many farms across the Redlands exists, I think.
And they are jobs that stay. They don't just stop. So for job growth, economic development, it's innovated. And Redlands, we are in a position with our beautiful environment and our positioning to two international airports and a major city to be leaders, and I think this is a great example, and all we're asking for is a workshop, and I think that might give the actual... We'll report back to council to investigate. That doesn't mean we're putting it in concrete and we're actually digging the slab. So report back, investigate, let's do it, and just give the Fish Protect people some certainty that at least we're looking at it before we lose them to another council.
Councillor Edwards, speaker against first, if I may. Councillor Gleeson, I'll come back to comment.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Pardon me. Thank you. I won't be supporting it. I have a real problem with why we're actually identifying a company that we want to go into collaboration with. We collaborate with very few industries in actual business sense. We quite often help coordinate and network different industries, but I have no idea why we would consider going into business with a particular company. It's been mentioned, it's a great opportunity for landowners in the rural futures. Councillor Ogilvie has just mentioned himself. I'm happy to ask council to coordinate some networking with some landowners in the city with this company. Let them provide the land. We don't provide land for any other private enterprise in the city, so why would we do it for one particular company? I won't be supporting the motion.
Councillor Bogliari.
Just on that point, recently there was an education, Australian Trade College. Council worked with them and it has been absolutely brilliant for this city. So we have done it only just recently with fantastic outcomes, and this is a similar.
Councillor Edwards, comment.
Thank you. Personally, I'm in favour with partnerships with industry, ways to better utilise some of our parcels of land, not only deliver some outcomes for our economy and the community, but also revenue sources to help fund the things we'd like to do in council. I think with this particular process, I think the it's been a little bit rushed. There are some questions I have. I noticed that the information that I was sent, the model that was proposed, did I believe about 4 million meals per annum. So I'd like to know that particular design that was provided to us wasn't a model that actually fitted within the poultry sheds. So I'd like to have some understanding how it works in the poultry sheds, what the estimated productions are. I'd also like to know what sort of business model does Fish Protector propose to partnership with council. I think we should have had some discussions around that. Are there any other similar aquacultural models in the city? I think we need to do some investigative work and also to find out if there's any other commercial entities within the city who'd like to partnership with them. I'd also like Fish Protector to come and present to councillors to present what they propose. So I'm not against the proposal as such, but I think we have to go through a method of engagement with Fish Protect and perhaps any other operator as well. So I think I'm a bit reluctant to support all those points up there. I'm happy to if points 2 and 3 get removed off. I'd be actually happy to if there was another additional point in there of having a workshop first, and then from that workshop we go out to for officers to investigate the collaboration. So, yeah. So, but I like the idea, but there's not enough information for me to make a full decision on it.
Speaker 4, Councillor Elliott.
Might have to change your manager. We're open for business. I can't believe this. The only suggestion I would say is take out 2, which was discussed yesterday. No. But everybody's killing this project.
Without sort of saying that suggests we're not open for business, that's what councillors have been saying. They've actually been saying that. It's the
really? Gee, must be in a different chamber. Withdraw that then. Sorry about that. We've on another project, we all fell over ourselves to it, and a chappy's gone away to do some homework. We've offered sites and we're all happy about that, and it creates jobs, and I'm a bit sceptical, but I think it may work. Yeah. Here we are, Councillor Ogilvie's bringing a job creation program to the council. All he wants is a report. We're not shovel ready, as Councillor Bogliari said. Councillor Telty actually suggested a site, so I thought it was a very good position in this city. And all he's asking for is a report. What are you so afraid of? Councillor Beard asked for one that wanted, you know, we'd go around the world and get best practice on local community councils or, you know, groups. This is a simple report to council on a project. It might come back and says, don't touch it. Don't touch it with a pointy stick. I'm happy to get the report back. What are we all afraid of?
Councillor Tolte, before, is there a comment?
I'd like to move an amendment to the motion, please, Madam Mayor.
Your amendment, Councillor.
I'd like to move that we remove dot points 2 and 3.
Is there a seconder to that amendment? Seconded, Councillor Beard. So we now have an amendment before us, which means that we've adjusted the motion to just have point 1.
I'd like to also amend it to add that we have a workshop, please, Madam Mayor, when the report is prepared.
Can I just before we move on, councillors, with the greatest respect to everyone, it is very intent on job creation. This isn't the first time an aquaculture project has been put on in front of us, if you recall. There's been one in this term of council, if I recall, down at CSIRO. The difference is that we have had a motion put in front of us without any real discussion. The project you referred to, Councillor Elliott, that hasn't come to for a motion of council. We spoke about that 3 or 4 times around here first. This is why I talk about motions on the run, And this is why we end up having these sorts of debates, because they're uninformed. They're uninformed by the time processes. So now, councillors, we are amending a motion once again on the floor, trying to make it so that we can actually get up, because we all want the same thing. This is just a reminder of how you do business. We're all part of this council. We all have offices. You can knock on the door and come and chat any time to get this right before we get into these chambers. Councillor Tolte, you have a moving amendment, item one, with an addition to that saying that a report be brought back to council before December. Is that correct?
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. Removing dot amendment. Points 2 and 3 and adding a new dot point 2, that the report, when it is prepared, be presented to council.
So...
Between 3 and 3.
With greatest respect.
Look,
it is silly that we're debating a motion that hasn't had any, barely any discussion in this council. So may I ask, have officers been spoken to about this at all? Officers, have you heard about this particular motion? Have you provided any advice to Councillor Ogilvie? So has there been any planning advice provided to Councillor Ogilvie about the court order on Runnymede Road? And for instance, I believe it's community purpose and this would be impact inconsistent use, correct?
I certainly haven't given any advice. I'm not sure if Councillor Ogilvie has spoken to any other officers.
That amount of information would have helped form a motion before it came to chambers. That's all I'm saying. So we're trying to get it right, Councillor Elliott. It's painful, yes, I don't like it either. We're trying to find a way forward so that we can adopt everyone's principle of job creation. We want to support aquaculture, but we need to make sure that it's going to stack up and get the numbers. That's what we're doing right now. Councillor Elliott.
This is a point of clarity, Madam Chair. The reason why Runnymede is stipulated as being something that needs to be considered is because I know that it is impacting consistent community purposes on that zone. But I don't think it is inconsistent with community purposes zone. It's because it's a particular kind of use. But in terms of the zone, i.e. community purposes, I don't think, in my opinion anyways, that it is inconsistent with the ethos or vision that we have for that site. But because it is inconsistent, impact inconsistent, I think it is important that we give some kind of direction or understanding there is political will around the possibility that might go there. That's why it's there. It's not to say anything other than two officers, it can go there. We don't think that that is inconsistent.
Councillor, if I could just respond. If you need political will, then you need to make sure there's been some discussion with councillors so they understand what you're trying to achieve. That's the issue we're facing today. Councillor Elliott, you wanted to make...
Through you to the CEO, what direction you've got for time frame?
Thank you, Councillor Elliott. The direction that we have is that we'll take the necessary time required to meet with officers and then bring it back to council, and then we'll be directed by council in terms of the time frame we can bring a report back. So we obviously work on resolutions of council as quickly as we possibly can, bearing in mind that we need to take the appropriate time to do the work that's required.
So we have had an amendment tabled. Can I just make sure that that's clear on the screen behind me? Question?
Through you to Councillor Ogilvie. In relation to December, I understand there is a time issue that's related. Before we make a decision on this, can we just be aware of that?
The point of dot point 3 is just to indicate that there's an urgency around this. These guys are looking around, they're moving, they've got offers, so... We need to show some political will and that we're nimble and able to take advantage of other people who are also nimble and on their own commercial timelines.
So they live in the Redlands. Yeah.
Are we aware of any other industries, that other businesses that may provide these services? Well, the report doesn't ask for that. Well, the report could, and that's, I come back to what I'm saying, if we had an opportunity to discuss this in a more fulsome way prior to being in here, we would have been able to address that. So we have an amendment. Councillor, are you happy for a time frame to be put in place? So that's what we have as an amendment. I'll have people vote on that amendment if I could. So it's moved and seconded. We've got mover and seconded Tolte and Beard. Those in favour? Those against? Okay, so the motion is, the amendment is lost. Those in favour? We've got Councillor Beard, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hardman. I'm voting on the amendment. Those against, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Elliott. Could you please put your hands up? Thank you, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Ogilvie, Councillor Boglar, Councillor Williams. Councillor Ogilvie, I'm going to ask you, with the greatest respect, to perhaps adjust that motion in a way that will get support in reflecting on what the amendment has just been lost.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to take suggestions, but I think I've put my point of view with regards to why I think we need to indicate that Runnymede should be considered. And I think I've put my point of view as to why I think there's a certain urgency around this. If there's any other suggestions...
Well, can I just add that Runnymede is going through a concept planning phase as well, so it could be incorporated rather than through this motion into that consideration. But I think if we're serious about jobs, we want to have an open mind about where they're created in the city, and this might not be the ideal place.
Well, I absolutely agree, and all I'm saying there with dot point two is that it be considered, and we, in essence, I'm trying to send an indication to officers that they don't need to be closed-minded about the possibility that it goes there. I'm happy to add dot points around having workshops, whatever other dot points people are wanting to suggest.
So, well, you've heard the debate, Councillor, so you've heard people talk about workshops, timeframes and locations, and considering it's your motion, and we would normally do this outside of session, if you wouldn't mind trying to put that together so that you can get the support required. Councillor Boglari.
I was just wondering if Councillor Ogilvie would be happy with consider the Runnymede site and other sites across the city for the setup of such activities, and therefore we're not just limiting or giving direction for officers for that one.
Happy with that for starters.
And in dot point
three... I'm just going to make a suggestion here that we suspend meeting proceedings and allow us to have this discussion, which we should have had prior to now, because otherwise we're going to be...
Moving a suspension, standing orders, Madam Chair.
So moved by Councillor Ogilvie, and we've got Councillor Boglari supporting that. Councillors, who supports suspending? No, this is standing orders or suspending the meeting. So we're still going to be around here discussing this in public forum.
I think we're pretty close.
Yeah. I don't think so.
Well, the only other suggestions I've heard is that there'll be a workshop held.
So can I just have a show of hands that we suspend standing orders, councillors?
We can admit.
We're suspending standing orders. Thank you. Those in favour? That's unanimous. Thank you.
Okay, so I would suggest then at dot point three that we add a report back to council and workshop.
Yeah. Workshop and report back to council.
Councillor Beard?
Madam Mayor, dot point two is now stupid. It doesn't exist. Just consider the whole city. This is ridiculous.
I'm happy to delete that, long as councillors
withdraw the motion and ask for a workshop. It's pretty simple. We've almost been workshopping it for the last 40 minutes. Dot point two now is stupid.
Madam Chair, I'm happy to withdraw dot point two, but the important point in dot point two is to indicate to officers that Runnymede is a possibility. If you agree with that, then
well,
I'm happy to withdraw
it. Well, I think if we're going to spend officers' resources on looking for a site, I think you probably want to be more wholesome anyway. I've heard the debate.
Withdraw dot point two, if that keeps Councillor Beard happy.
One other suggestion was for a presentation. Don't know whether you wanted to...
Well, that could be in a workshop, which is...
It could be. I just want to... It was hanging in the air.
Councillor Elliott?
Matt, just a question on three. Council on progress. I thought it was a report back to council. It was just on the progress report. Well, you can just leave it as a workshop, can't we?
I think
as long as the report comes back to workshop, let's move on.
Please. That's it. That's exactly what Councillor Beard was saying. And I can honestly say that you could probably, not have a resolution to make this happen. anyway. But we're here now, and it's been lodged, and we're debating it, and we're unfortunately we're wordsmithing it at the same time.
Okay, we're ready.
Thank you, Councillor Elliott, for assisting with Chair. Councillors, just quickly going around the room before we resume standing orders, are we happy with, is there support for that? Just indicate that, please. Okay. All right, so a motion.
We resume standing orders.
A motion that we resume standing orders being moved by Councillor Ogilvie and seconded by Councillor Borglari. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. All right, Councillor Ogilvie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Summing up.
Well, I'll just double check. Look, councillors, I think there's been a fair amount of angst around this, and this is probably an opportunity to remind you of your responsibilities as part of this council. If you want to get support on a motion, it's really important that you have those broader discussions before you get here in the chambers. I just want to remind you that again. I've seen the use of notice of motion on a couple of occasions now where we haven't had an opportunity to discuss it. If you're really serious about getting support, you need to have these discussions prior to coming into this room. Is there any further discussion before I hand back to Councillor Ogilvie to sum up? No? Okay, with that, we'll hand back to you, Councillor Ogilvie.
I'm happy to put it to the vote, Madam Chair.
Put the motion, those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour is Councillor Bishop, Councillor Beard, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Hardman, Councillor Ogilvie, Councillor Borglari, Councillor Williams. Those against, Councillor Gleeson. Thank you, councillors. Councillors, the next item on... there is no urgent business without notice that I've been made aware of. We do have, however, item in closed session, and I'm just asking if you require to go into closed session to have that discussion. There being none, then I just need a motion to move and second that. Just let me get to my report. Councillor Gleeson, it's your... Sorry. Oh, Councillor Edwards, or Councillor Gleeson, you're deferring to Councillor Edwards to move the motion. Stop being so nice to each other. Just get on with it.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd like to move item 16.1.1, SMBI Land Acquisition for Trail Network, please.
Moved by Councillor Gleeson, seconded by Councillor Edwards. There is no discussion. I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. With that, I believe we can close the meeting at 11:22. Thank you for your participation, and thank you to the members in the gallery.